Hello and welcome to another episode of Providing Pediatrics, a Better Today, Healthier Tomorrow podcast where we're addressing the unique challenges of pediatric care. I'm your host, Charles Woolley. Today I sat down with Dr. Jason Williams, Chief Mental Behavioral Health Officer here at Arkansas Children's. We discussed the increased mental and behavioral health needs across the state and they discussed what Arkansas Children's is doing to address those needs. Thank you for joining us. All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Williams, for being here. This is amazing to get down to finally sit down and talk to you with the cameras rolling. We've had the conversations, a lot of conversations about this, flying up to Northwest Arkansas or just in passing. I'll really, really appreciate your passion and drive. And I've witnessed since you've been here a change kind of in the direction. And it's just felt great to see just an uptick in our awareness and really, I feel like we're making lots and lots of strides in the right direction when it comes to behavioral health and mental health with pediatric population in Arkansas. So thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the opportunity and having the conversation in a different way. So
it's wonderful. So before we got started, I was joking about, what is your favorite dessert? Because sometimes whenever you're trying to break the ice with people, you're like, if you were a dessert, what would you come back as, a kind of thing? And you said the better way to do that is, what is your favorite sound?
Yes.
I love that. So what is your favorite sound?
My favorite sound. So my favorite sound is the sound of wind going through pine trees. So I grew up in Colorado in the mountains in a small rural town there. And that was my backyard. So it has fond memories both from my childhood, but that's my happy place. So that's where I like to go. And so that's my sound.
Wow. I love that because I could just see that. A whole picture whenever you said that. I grew up in the piney woods in East Texas, not quite the same thing, but I do know that smell.
Yeah.
Pine trees, cedar trees. And as a child, there was a cedar grove behind my house and the limbs were so low to the ground that I had to crawl underneath those branches. And then there was an opening inside.
It's like a fort inside, right?
Yeah. So that cedar smell and the wind blowing through there was so loud, it's amazing. So I love that. It's your favorite sound. So Colorado, how'd you end up in Arkansas?
So great story. So I was working at Children's Hospital in Colorado. So I've spent my entire career in children's hospitals. Before that was in Los Angeles, at Los Angeles Children's Hospital, which is where I started my training. Got a phone call one day looking for a leader here in Arkansas to come and help support the behavioral health mission. And I came and talked with folks and it was an easy sell. I landed here with the hope and opportunity to make a difference, both for the hospital system, but also for the kids in Arkansas.
You stepped into a really great team.
Yes.
I can't say enough about the social workers here at Arkansas Children's working in the emergency department and the PICU. I have always been just floored and impressed and walk away going, wow, these guys have a really tough job and they just do it with style and grace and compassion.
They are some of the most important parts of our system that probably aren't as noticed as often. They don't get a lot of fanfare because the work is tough. They go home every night knowing that made a difference because I think they do. And we've added some interesting new roles to those teams as well. So we added for the first time a certified behavioral health, a board certified behavior analyst.
Okay.
And that's somebody who typically works with kids in the community with developmental delays or autism. But we had them coming here bedside to be actually able to support proactively those kids who have those needs so they can write behavior plans for their teams to really work with. And so thinking about how we do this care differently on top of the amazing work that the social workers already do.
That's amazing. Like I said, even looking at your leadership and the whole team, it's just an impressive group. And like I said, I just feel this going in the right direction. With that being said, about it going in the right direction. We were also discussing how we think about behavioral health and mental health as a society beforehand. And you were saying that maybe that's generational.
Yeah. So there's some, you talk about stigma, right? And one of the biggest barriers to getting care for many families is the stigma of what it means to have a mental health condition. Mm-hmm. And so how do I break that down and make it more accessible to people? What we're seeing is the Gen X generation down is much more willing to have those conversations about people who have mental health conditions. Youth, they're wide open. I have two young adult kiddos, and they've been talking about mental health since middle school.
Well, I mean, they has
they do have a little bit of an influence with their father, but try to make it accessible. But they'll talk about their friends are doing that, and I just think it's a more of a commonplace. There's still stigma. There's certainly stigma in certain populations. It's still harder for some people. So really, framing the concern is as about health, and not about mental health or physical health.
Okay,
whole health. And how do we really manage the whole health of a person? And you have to take all that into consideration. And that gets away from the stigma, right?
Yeah.
And it's hard for people to say, well, of course I want to be holistically healthy, right?
Absolutely. So. I love that approach. So looking at myself right now, being vulnerable, it's like, I want to be the best I can be.
Yeah.
So going to counseling on a regular basis is only going to make me a better person, right? Working out every day, that makes me a better person. Eating right, that makes me a better person. So I'm all doing all of these things in a holistic approach. So it's not like I'm just working on one thing because I have a problem with that one thing, right? So yeah, I want to address the whole thing.
It's flipping it to that health, right? And looking proactively how you can really attend to the emotional needs of a human being are just as important. We know the brain is connected to that body, and that brain's connected to the emotional heart as well.
Right, right. One of the things I think the big problem, I think the big thing is why, you know, I keep hearing about this is a mental health crisis in the youth. Mm-hmm. And that's worrisome. That's scary. That's one of those things that you're like, why, what's happening? What's going on with this? So you were telling me about a report that we did.
Yeah. So we at the hospital every 3 years actually put together a report called the Community Health Needs Assessment.
Right.
And we interview key stakeholders around the state, parents, and this year we actually interviewed youth. And the intent there is to decide how as a hospital system can we support the community?
Sure.
And so we prioritize those needs. And for the last two reports, mental health has become one of the number one reasons that the community needs us to focus on.
Okay.
And so I have a couple statistics out of that report I'd like to share just to sort of paint the picture. So Arkansas, the state, for mental health conditions is 44th out of 50 states. So higher is better on that. We're not the bottom, but we certainly have some opportunity for improvement.
Sure.
When we start to look at providers, how many kids can be seen by a provider in the state? The regional, it's 420 to one. So 420 kids to one provider. And generally in Arkansas, it's 380 to one. So we just don't have enough people to actually help support the mental health needs in the state. And then this is the statistic that really always gets me, which is suicide. And we are seeing an increase in youth suicide to the point that it's one of the leading causes of death for 10 to 14 year olds in the country. And in Arkansas, we actually have a ratio per 100,000 youth of 11.6 compared to a national average of 10.5. So we have a problem with suicide, broadly speaking, but in our state, we have a little bit more of that happening. That's a preventable harm. That's a preventable thing that we can do, any of us can do in our society. So that sort of paints a little bit of the picture about what we're finding here in Arkansas. The other thing we've heard from youth is that they're stressed. They are feeling a lot of stress, and it's no surprise as to why that might be the case. One of the things that's in their hands every single day is the world. It's accessible to them instantaneously without filters. And so when I was growing up, maybe when you were growing up, playing in those woods in Colorado, I wasn't picking up the news.
No.
It was a newspaper or a conversation with my parents that really informed me. Now it's in their hands every minute of the day. The other thing is the American Psychological Association does a report every year called Stress in America. And the Generation Z, so those are kiddos up to about 25, 26, are the most stressed generation on the planet. And if you think about it, they've undergone school shootings. They've been dealing with natural disasters. They've had all sorts of things in their lifetimes that the previous generations probably hadn't experienced.
That's true.
So
that's true.
It's a flood of that, and how to cope with all of that and also become an adult through those normal things that you have to do.
Do you think that the generation before them is contributing to that in some way with some bias?
Possibly. There's a whole body of work out there that really came out of the Anxious Generation book that has been very popular recently that talks about how we, as society started to protect kids in the 80s, and we stopped allowing them that free play and the opportunity to learn from each other and interact with one another. The parenting became more controlled.
Sure.
Not because the parents thought they were doing something wrong. It wasn't a judgment. It was just that's what everyone was doing. And then we introduced cell phones and video games and even isolated those kids even further.
Sure.
So we're actually talking about trying to create free play spaces in our hospital where kids can come and just be.
Just be.
And just be kids. If you think about it, yeah. Go to a playground and look at the rules that are out there. There are rules on playgrounds. When I was growing up, the rules were what you and I would have come up with
right. And
an agreement that day. And we'd have negotiated that, right? We would have figured it out. We would have accused each other of cheating, perhaps, if they didn't follow the rules that day.
Mm-hmm.
That just doesn't exist anymore. The kids are looking to the adults in their life to manage them. And so
it's really hard.
When it's not there,
it's really hard.
I'm going to feel anxious.
As a parent, like I was just at a playground with my kiddos, and my job was to be careful, watch out, don't do that, don't throw rocks, you know?
Yep.
And I know what you're saying is probably true, and I should probably just turn around and look the other way.
Let them get to the, I always joke, let them get to the cliff, not over it.
Yes.
So that they understand, oh, there is something here that I need to be aware of.
Yes.
And that I can feel generally anxious about, but appropriately anxious, and then navigate it. Obviously, I don't want them throwing rocks at each other where they're going to, you know, knock their heads out or something
right,
like
right.
that. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, as a paramedic and an ER nurse, and I'm thinking mechanism of injury. And I've got one kid that's a climber.
Uh-huh.
She was up on top of the tallest rock. And I didn't say anything. I just watched her until she got close to the edge. I'm like, careful, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what we have to do. But oh my goodness, it's tough being a parent.
It is.
Because you're worried about them and you don't want them to get hurt. But I see the point of them being able to be kids and be able to learn.
Yeah. And that's what we want to do here too, is just have opportunities for kids to be kids.
Right. So getting back to the teen suicide thing, I read about that national average being like the third leading cause of death in that age from 10 to 18, was it like that teenage years? Why is that on, other than the things that you mentioned, you know, screen time and all the pressures, why is it on such a rise? Is there anything else that we haven't talked about that's contributing to that?
Well, there's a lot of interesting questions to be answered
sure.
there. There's not a single answer that anyone's ever been able to point to. It's mm-hmm. sort of multifactorial, right? So
sure.
you've got social media, you've got the pressures that didn't exist for a generation, you have parenting styles that don't match up to that. And so we have kids who are sort of in a crisis. The thing that really broke it more recently is COVID. And when we pulled kids out of their worlds and isolated them, it made it even more challenging. A lot of kids talk about feeling lonely. There's an epidemic of loneliness, is someone described the other day. And it's actually interesting. It's in men as for the first time they're looking at it, and which is not typically what you would have seen in the mental health literature over the last 20 years.
Wow.
So I think all of those things contribute. If your parents feeling lonely and you're isolated, that connection is hard to make. And so, you know, just making that time for each other. We've lost times where society, cultures sit around and have these types of conversations.
That's true.
And making the connection in a different way. One of the things I always encourage families to do is have a dinner, whatever that dinner looks like for you. It might, it's being able to just sit and talk with each other. Even if it's in silence, that's okay.
Valuable.
You're connected.
So
and
valuable.
Connection's important to stave off all of this stuff.
Talk to me about the warning signs.
Yeah, so a lot of what we look for in kids, particularly younger kids, we start to look for things like irritability, mm-hmm. Sleep patterns being negatively impacted, and really worry about, you know, if they're just not themselves. And parents will say that. They don't feel like themselves. And so that's what you would look for in sort of the school-age kids. It's harder to see, you know, their school performance. They may have difficulties with friends. They might talk about those kinds of things as well. But where we really start to see those warning signs is in adolescence, so the 12 and up. And there we're looking for things. Sleep disturbance is a big one. Adolescents already struggle with sleep.
Right.
But sleep's so important for that brain development. If that's disturbed, then depression actually can follow suit right after it.
Sure.
Changes in eating or sleeping habits, friendship changes. So if they're now with a new group of friends, that's mm-hmm. a different group of friends. There might be something going on there. And then checking people's phones, knowing what they're looking at online, what those texts look like, particularly for those younger adolescents. As the kids get older, you want more autonomy, so you want them to have the ability to manage that. But a 12 to 14-year-old doesn't know how to manage the cyberbullying that might be going on.
True. So, you know, I'm thinking about this from my Generation X point of view.
Yeah.
And so how do I know that's not just a teenager becoming a teenager, right? There's so many changes in, yeah. And I know that sounds, it's probably ill-informed, but there's so many changes whenever you, I remember when I became a teenager, I'd started hanging out with different people and I started dressing a different way. And there was more things that were more important to me, right? Priorities all changed, yes. Right?
Right. And the parents aren't the place you want to have that conversation, right?
So, exactly.
Yes. No, I think the difference is if it impacts your ability to be successful and functioning. And so, yes, you're going to try on different identities. You're going to interact with different groups in school. That you want to see, actually. That's a very important milestone for adolescents to go through.
Right.
Managing one's emotions. But when they start not doing that,
okay,
they're locking themselves in their room. They're not engaging with friends, mm-hmm. or they're crying a lot, sleeping a lot. Those are when that's tipped out of just a typical kind of, I'm playing around with my identity and trying to understand who I am in the world, to I should be concerned as a parent that I might need to ask some questions.
Sure. Sure. So, what can I do about that? So if I'm a parent, normally this podcast is kind of pointed at providers in the field, but I'm thinking about this as a parent, like what, if I start seeing these warning signs, what should I do?
First thing to do is ask your child, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. And the key to that question is not answering it for them.
Okay.
As parents, we tend to ask the question, and then when they give us an answer, I'm fine, then we either back off and leave it alone, or we keep asking more questions.
Sure.
Allowing the space to listen and be available to your child and keep asking that question will eventually open them up to a place that they feel comfortable with you. Now, that's not all families. There are certain circumstances and situations, unfortunately, where that parent may not be the safe person to that child.
Right.
And it may be a teacher or a counselor or a coach that is that place. So anybody can do that with any kid, but really asking the question and then waiting for that to happen. And it's a very uncomfortable space. It's something, as a therapist, I had to train myself to wait and to listen to what that response, watch the body language. Did people tense up? Those kinds of things. But that's the first step. Then if I'm not okay comes up, which is an important thing to be able to say, it's okay if you're not okay, is then to seek out help. And you can start with your pediatrician. You don't have to try to find a therapist, but just having those conversations there would be important.
So just a, are you okay?
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah.
That's
very empathic.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Nice. And I think that could be super useful for school nurses that listen to this podcast, and even a paramedic in the back of an ambulance, you know, with a teenager that's disturbed, just, are you okay? And then allowing that's the hard part. Like you said, it's going to be hard to like really let them open up without asking multiple questions, because it's like ingrained in us.
It's, and particularly as healthcare providers, we have a series of questions we want to get answered. And sometimes it's just that one to start with. Feeling seen and heard is a human thing. Anybody loves that.
Absolutely.
Right. And so our youth are the same way. We just need to find spaces for them to be able to do that. And the teens will tell you that. They worry about their parents.
Right.
One of the things that came out in this report was that they are worried about substance use in their families. And so we're seeing a rise in those things happening. And that really has not, that really started much more in COVID and has not stopped. So that's another concern.
I know there's a plethora of other conditions that we treat here. What are we doing here at Arkansas Children's? I feel like we're making all these strides and steps in moving forward. What are we doing, and what are some of our future plans as far as absorbing these emergencies and need for care?
Yeah, great question. So we really started first dealing with the most acute. So the kiddos that were showing up to our emergency department and having a mental health crisis. So we've redesigned how that works. We actually created a space in our emergency department that is a safe healing space just for those kids who are having that need.
It's valuable.
Huge. Staffing it with professionals who are mental health professionals.
Great.
So they know what to do when that's occurring.
Right.
We work with our community partners as well to make sure that we have places for kids to go, should there need to be. We have a team that follows up with those kids after they go home to make sure that their needs are being met.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And then we are also creating spaces within the hospital to help support kids when they're here for a medical need, but also have a psychological or psychiatric condition that has to be supported. So we built a multidisciplinary consultation team that can go in and help. Our behavior response team is also proactively rounding on kids to help support. Right. That's all within the hospital itself. We've started to integrate mental health professionals into primary care as a mechanism of saying, let's deal with whole health in that way. So we're giving that message. We are doing universal screening for depression. One of the only hospitals in the country that's really taken that big step. It's a big, hard thing to do.
That's wow. Amazing.
We did 30,000 screens last year.
So good. So
we're catching kids early. And if we can catch them early, then they don't need our ED as our front door to care.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. We're following. The follow-up thing caught my attention as you were listing off all those wonderful things. Once I heard a statistic, and this is probably super old, about if somebody is going to go down that pathway where we're talking about suicide and it's a suicide attempt, there's going to be another one, right? And so the fact that you guys are following up with these patients, that's huge.
Yeah. We're actually joining a national collaborative to look at suicide practices and prevention practices. We did a whole thing down at the Capitol last year where we brought youth who told their story about overcoming. And we're going to do that again this year for Suicide Awareness Day, working with the American Suicide Foundation. So there's a lot happening. Strategically, what we're going to be doing is integrating mental and behavioral health into all of our primary and specialty care. So it's come alongside that physical health, and that's really the goal of the next 5 years.
That's super exciting and wonderful to hear that that's the direction we're going. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that's kind of like a long time coming. We finally are getting to where we need to go. And it's been a little bit of a struggle. I remember being super frustrated not being able to move patients out, you know, down in the emergency department. We'd have them there for days and sometimes, and we just, there was just no place to go. And you were telling me the other day when we were talking about this, that it's not really about the number of pediatric behavioral health beds in the other facilities, but it's the type. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, there was an article done in JAMA, around pediatric mental health beds around the country. They did a ratio per 100,000 kids, kind of like these statistics, and Arkansas was number one. So we have more pediatric psychiatric beds than any other state in the country. It's a little dated article, but it's probably still accurate. When I first arrived here, one of the questions I had was, how long are kids staying in our emergency department? And someone said they're under 8 hours. I'm like, yeah, that can't be right. other places are talking days, sometimes weeks. For kids being stuck. Now, there are kids that do. So kids that are under 12, the beds just aren't designed for those kids. So we take care of them in a different way. If you have an intellectual disability or autism, the spaces that are in those other hospitals also are not well equipped. And that population probably stays the longest in our hospital. And we try to support them as best we can. And then if you have a medical condition on top of that, so if you have diabetes, for example, the hospitals just aren't equipped with skilled nursing, so they can't take those kids. So we have to take care of them too.
Any of those little specialties like that, that's just going to make things. And that's why we do all the things we do here. So that would be appropriate in my mind. It's like, this is where they should be so we can oversee their care. But whatever this problem was, something that was in my face all the time, we didn't have that space that you guys have now in the emergency department, which is just a win and just wonderful. So all these things sound exciting, and I know we're going in the right direction. What's your pie in the sky dream for this program?
So I would love us to be able to see it as a health system that we no longer talk about mental health separately.
Okay.
I know that seems like a specific programmatic aim, but it speaks to our culture. And if our culture really sees mental health as equal to physical health, then we start caring for kids in that way. And we reduce the prevalence of these numbers. We start to identify kids early on. We've got to get preventative in nature. We've got to work with our communities to be able to be successful in bending this curve for this crisis.
I love that. And my heart's in the community. So when you said that, my ears perked up and I'm like, how can we do that? I love that. That's a wonderful, wonderful idea. I love all that. What is it? There's something about your enthusiasm for this. What is it about behavioral health at Arkansas Children's that you love so much? Because it's obvious you love it and care about it.
You know, there's very few times where you see an opportunity in either a job or an environment where you look at it and go, there's a problem, but there's a bunch of people who want to solve this problem together. I feel completely supported in my role by the hospital system, by the community. Everywhere I go, it's like, let's figure this out. And so it's really easy for me to get up in the morning and say, let's go figure it out. Knowing that it's out there. And that's really, for me, that's a career opportunity that just doesn't come along very often. So my enthusiasm comes from those that I share the work with.
Right. I love that. That's so cool. We talk a lot about mission driven, and that's where I resonate from, and I love it. So thank you for doing that. Thank you for your contribution here. Thank you for sitting down and having this conversation. We'll have to do it again because I think we just barely scratched the surface.
Indeed.
But looking forward to more. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's awesome. Thank you.